The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Great Monday. Thanks for being with us. We are into tonight's championship game, national title game of Clemson and LSU. It's finally here. The professor, Paula Bovin, is in New Orleans for the Clemson-LSU game tonight. She cannot talk to us. Eric, is that the deal? We have ground rules now. Paula's gotten to the point where there's ground rules about what I can ask her and can't ask her. She's gone from the Arizona Republic columnist to the Hall of Famer for the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame to the professor to the point where she's laying down what I can ask her.
It's not really a her deal. It's more of a CFP deal.
So Paula's on the CFP, the College Football Playoff Committee.
Yeah, she just can't talk specifics about the game. She can talk about the beignets she's been eating in New Orleans, all the celebrities she's run into, the mass of LSU fans that I'm sure have invaded NOLA, but she can't talk specifically about the game.
Well, why are we having her on?
I don't know. You booked her, so I don't know.
I'll just make fun of her. Kevin Harlan will be with us today. Wow, Eric went out and got Kevin Harlan, NFL on CBS, Westwood One, good friend of the show. Called Seattle Green Bay last night. I thought the highlights of the weekend in sports, Jimmy Johnson and Bill Cowher being told live on television with no idea that they were going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame was great because it was raw emotion. And the other great story was Charlie Turner Thorne, our buddy over at Arizona State University. ASU women beat the number 2 and number 3 ranked teams in women's basketball in a span of 48 hours. How often does that happen? Give me a time where Duke or North Carolina or UCLA or whomever in their sport beat the number 2 ranked team and number 3 ranked team in 48 hours and did them both at home in Tempe. Friday night, Oregon. Yesterday, Oregon State. So those are the highlights to me of the weekend. We're brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And that is with life insurance. We're going to have lunch later today with Sagicor's CEO, Michael Stricker. Good guy. Like Mike a lot. We talk about what's going on with the business. We talk about what's going on in sports. We went to Topgolf and hit some balls a few weeks back. But I know this about Sagicor. When we say protect what matters most, because I have my license too, it really is about that. Because life insurance is there for you. If something were to happen to you today or tonight and you didn't come home, would everything be handled? Everything be taken care of for your family, and you can do that with life insurance. And life insurance can do much more than that. It really can. Check into taking care of your college with life insurance, all right? There's all sorts of different ways, shapes, forms you can go with your life insurance. It's Sagicor Now. Log on to Sagicor Now, get your free quote. That's at Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. So I felt like the games were great. The games were just amazing. They were terrific. All four NFL playoff games. I've come to realize that the NFL I don't like in August. I tolerate it a little bit in September. October, it gets a little bit better. By Thanksgiving, things start to get serious. By the end of the season, only because we're in Arizona, the last few weeks are futile, and teams will hold out players. A team like Baltimore holding out players, now looking back on it, man, were they awful. Kansas City, they were awful. They trailed, the Chiefs did, by 24. Trailed by 24. And I'm watching the game yesterday like, oh, good. I get to go on my ride. I get to go on a run. I'm going to go work out. I'm going to go do all these things. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, no, I'm not going to do any of those things. And so I laid around like a toad and watched the afternoon go into the evening because the evening game was really good. The Packers-Seahawks was everything that I like in football. Nothing against Pat Mahomes. And watching Kansas City roar back, I'm just not a big fan of Houston. That's not my team. The 49ers, we've talked about how the 49ers stockpile draft picks on their offensive and defensive front. And that's why John Lynch has them going. That's why the 49ers, you look at them in the NFC West, and here in Arizona, yeah, there's some nice pieces, but, you know, they're a long ways away from where the 49ers are from my view. So that's going on. The other sports stuff from the weekend was pretty straightforward. The Coyotes, they lose last night. The Suns beat Charlotte, who's not good. It was an off night for Devin Booker. On the college basketball front, Eric and I bump into each other this morning. The first thing he said is U of A. And it was the predictability. So you stayed up and watched that game last night against Oregon State?
I saw the second half. I flipped it on after the Pat was on Green FS1? Bay Seattle game. Yeah. Yeah, I saw on Twitter that it was on FS1, and I got really excited because I can't watch the conference network. So I flipped it on and watched the second half of it.
And now, so I did not watch, full disclosure. Were they that bad?
It was more Oregon State was that good. They shot 66% from the field or something ridiculous in the second half. And as you and I talked about this morning, you can just mark on your calendar that U of A is going to lose in Corvallis every single year. Well, they play Oregon. They play Oregon on a Thursday. Yeah. It's a huge game. It's an emotional game.
Yeah.
They close loss this year, and then they sit up in Oregon for 4 days in the rain, and Oregon State has this game circled on their calendar every year, and it's like an 8:10 start Phoenix time on a Sunday night, and you saw what happened last night.
When I hear the term student-athlete, and it's thrown around by the NCAA or even the Pac-12, and you have U of A playing Sunday night at 8 o'clock in January, and it doesn't matter if they're back in school or not.
We should call them athlete students.
I mean, it's just absurd because so they had to leave Wednesday to go to Oregon,
right?
Which is like an hour and 45-minute flight, and you can fly direct into Eugene. That's not so bad. So they probably went through a walkthrough on Wednesday night. Thursday morning, they went through a walkthrough. They played Thursday night, which was a hard game. There might have been a study hall in the middle of the day. Maybe not. Friday, they get up, and they're in Corvette. They're in Eugene, Oregon. They have nothing to do Friday. They have nothing to do Saturday.
They probably went to like the Nike outlet up there.
They
maybe,
probably went to the Nike outlet, they're or they Nike probably school. Had study hall yeah. or they
so how far is it from how far is it from Eugene to Corvallis for those of us who have not made that trip?
Less than an hour.
Okay, so super.
If you take
short.
The back road, it's beautiful. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like that part of the country, but it's a flipping joke to tell college kids that, oh, by the way, you've got to sit around for 3 days, essentially, because there's no way they left last night unless they chartered. And if they chartered, they got out of there probably, I don't know, the game was at 8? Game was at 8, ended at 10. So they probably didn't get, if they chartered, they probably didn't get out of there at 1 in the morning because they had to go back down to Eugene, which means they'd get home at 4, 5. And then if they have class today, so they wipe out 5 days just to put this on FS1 in front of family and friends, I'm assuming. I mean, there's probably some rabid fans there in Corvallis, but it's just absurd. Absurd. All right, we're going to go to it's a big story is the national title game. I want to get the professor on here in a minute. Paula Bovin from Arizona State University. She is part of the college football committee. She's part of the CFP. I cannot ask her about that. So guess what? We're going to play the game of mental gymnastics with Paula. What questions can I ask her and what can't I? That will be on the other side, and that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm Brad Sussmat. So one of the rules on coming on this show is I don't tell guests what I'm going to ask them, and they can't tell me what I can't ask them. And so when I wanted to have the professor on, here's the thing with Paula. Paula Bovin is so big now that she can dictate. When she was at the Republic at AZ Central, she would come on and she'd be Paula. And then she ends up going over to Cronkite where she's the professor. Then she gets to a place where it's, I can't talk about this with you. And me being me said, well, I just want to have you on because I missed your lasagna party. And she's in Louisiana. For full disclosure, Paula is part of the college football playoff committee that put this together. So it's Clemson and it's LSU. She cannot talk about it. So I can't ask you, let's just set the ground rules. I can't ask you anything about which Tiger is going to win.
That is correct, Brad. See if you can obey the rules for once.
Okay, so are the Tigers going to win tonight? I can't ask you that question. It's a trick question.
I know. But I don't even want to answer it because someone will pick it up and I'll catch a hard time about it.
Oh, but then I'll go viral and everybody will say you went viral, which is just dumb.
I know,
but I haven't talked to you in so long. It's so good to hear your voice. So where are you right now? Where are you doing this interview from?
I'm actually doing it from the World War II Museum, which is an unbelievable museum in New Orleans, if anybody ever goes here. It's incredible. So that's actually where I'm doing this from.
Okay, that's fair. Are there a lot of – which fan base are there more of, the Tigers or the Tigers?
I think I can speak generally about this is okay.
Okay.
I've seen a lot of sort of Clemson here because I think they came into town earlier. You know, I think the other team is – some are driving later driving down. So I'm sure I've seen tons of both, but a little bit more of Clemson early on.
What has the buzz been like? Because I've heard mixed. I heard around Thursday, Friday into Saturday, not much from LSU. Then Clemson was owning the city. Then LSU fans started showing up yesterday. Can you paint me a picture of what the buzz is like with these two fan bases?
Well, anybody who said there's not a lot of buzz down here is crazy. You can't go anywhere without bumping into someone from one of the two teams, and they are, you know, at concerts and hotels, at restaurants. Everything in the city here is pretty much decorated with the CFP logo. So there is a insanity, I would say, as far as the excitement about this game down here.
Where have you eaten?
They've taken care of us here with the CFP at a lot of different spots, but a lot of things within the hotel. So I haven't been going out to a lot of restaurants because we are well served here.
Have you been on a piano singing? Have you done any fun stuff as you're apt to do in New Orleans? People like to have fun there. Can you do any of that?
There have been a couple of trips to Bourbon Street.
Yeah, there you go.
But I've not stood on a piano. There is, you know, a certain amount of decorum, Brad, I must exhibit in this very important position I hold.
I understand this.
So I am not doing anything outrageous or crazy right now.
Has this turned out to be everything you thought it would for this matchup leading into it tonight?
What do you mean? I can't talk anything specific like that, Brad.
So no.
I know you're baiting me a little bit.
No, I'm not baiting you. I mean, in terms of as the game came together from the semifinals to the finals, has this, because there's this side of it that the NFL playoffs are taking away from this game. You're there, I'm not. So I'm just curious if you've seen or heard anything along those lines.
Maybe it's because of where I am, but this game is all anybody's talking about. I mean, people are talking about how it could be one of the greatest games ever played, about the talent on these two teams, about the matchup. There is a lot of buzz down here, and so the other conversation, I haven't heard that at all, you know, but maybe, again, it's because I'm immersed in this right now.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. Are you having fun? You sound somewhat serious.
Oh.
Are you having fun?
Oh, my God. I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. Being part of the committee has been an amazing experience, and just being part of here for 3-4 days is pretty incredible.
Are you recognized when you're out? Do people recognize you?
No.
Anybody asked you for an
just
autograph?
Among people I already know. No autograph.
You know, if I were there, I would do that.
Well, that's because that's how you are.
I would be
now,
that guy.
You know, the Ronnie Lotts of the world probably get hit up a lot, but not the little sports writers of the world.
Okay, who have you seen that you've just lost your breath over, celebrity-wise, while you've been down there? Anybody?
You know, in the sports world, you get a little jaded. I did see Nas in concert, which was pretty awesome for me as someone of a lover of rap and hip hop for many years. So that was exciting.
Wow, yeah. Listen to you.
Yeah, but not so much in the sports world.
Yeah. What will you be doing tonight?
So I will be with my committee members in a suite at the stadium. That's, the CFP. And this is like public knowledge. You don't get paid or anything. You do it because you love college football, which I do immensely.
Yes.
But one of the nice things they reward us with is we get to watch a game in the suite. And so that's going to be awesome.
And what will you do the rest of today? Do you have obligations? Are you just taking it all in? What's your
day
look like?
Really, this weekend is just kind of about enjoying it. And so I'm taking in a lot of things in New Orleans. Like I said, I'm at this museum right now, which is awesome. And so that's primarily been this weekend. That's what it's about. And it's a really great thing for me to be able to do.
So I think we've done well here. I don't want to put you in any harm's way. I didn't put you in harm's way, did I, on this? I asked you if the Tigers were going to win because that was the easy one. Everything else is fine.
Right.
I love hearing your laugh. I would love to see you in person sometime when you can slow down.
I would love that too, Brad.
How's that? I'll see you. Take care.
That was really good.
Okay. Bye. Get out of here.
Bye.
There's Paula Bovin there. Was I fine on that? Was I too soft? I was fine. All right. We have Kevin Harlan's on the other side. We'll take a break. Kevin Harlan, Westwood One and CBS on the NFL playoffs. That's next. And now let's turn our attention to not just the games over the weekend, but a look ahead to the Super Bowl potential matchups down to the Final Four with Kevin Harlan, NFL on CBS and Westwood One. He did the Packers-Seahawks last night on the radio side with James Lofton. He does many, many games with Kurt Warner, a good friend during the season as well. I appreciate you coming on, Kevin, as always. I want to start with Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson. The games were terrific. And the emotion that was shown, I know as you, a fan as I am of the NFL and the history and tradition, what were your thoughts in seeing both men over the weekend being given the news of going into the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think there's nothing, good to be on with you, Brad, there's nothing that's I think, more compelling than seeing some raw emotion from people that we've watched from afar, that we've held in high esteem and have accomplished so much professionally, and that's what we saw with Bill and with Jimmy. And the platform was new for the NFL. They have really not gone down the road and done it as publicly, although the last couple of years they have followed the people from the Hall of Fame as they go down the hotel corridor and knock on the door and watch the door open with the look of surprise and elation and emotion of the people that are being considered for the Hall of Fame in Canton. So we've seen this, you know, bits and pieces in the past, and they're heartwarming and they're terrific. And then to see it live on television, I thought was pretty substantial. I'm a big fan of both. They both accomplished. Their credentials are right there for all to see, but the fact that the league and the networks and the Hall of Fame decided to kind of collaborate and do something like that, I thought was pretty magical. You don't see that every day, and it's a big honor. And people that are in the NFL realize that there are championships to be won, there are personal goals to attain, there are great statistical milestones to reach, but getting in Canton and being part of Pro Football's Hall of Fame is a special reserved club that doesn't come just to anybody. So to get in is a big deal, and you could see it in the faces and the reaction of the people that were honored and the people around them that work with them and what it meant to everybody.
I'm curious because in the broadcast world, sometimes broadcasters are given heads up, especially on a national platform like Westwood One. Did you have any idea of, hey, you might want to watch what's going on at halftime?
No, we didn't. I'm trying to go back to when Bill was a couple days ago, and I don't recall that anything really came across that this is going to happen. I think there had been, and going back now through my memory, there may have been someone that had mentioned that there's going to be a special announcement on the NFL today. But when David Baker goes out there, and he's a big guy, and we know we've seen him at halftime ceremonies when he's given the ring and given the jacket to whoever's being honored from that particular city, and that's a great way to do it because we see the people that have been elected and inducted then are awarded their ring at halftime of a home game the following season, which is really neat. And but this was pretty special, and like I said, it's been kind of a outlier in terms of how they've proceeded in the past. It's a vote by 50 people for the election to the Hall of Fame. That is, it's not shrouded in mystery, but there is a lot of mechanics behind the scenes that goes into this. So I can only imagine when someone broached the topic, Brad, about doing it live on national TV before a playoff game, divisional weekend, which was a huge weekend.
Right.
I'm sure it was met with, oh, but that's a great idea, or yeah. Wow, should we really go down there since we've never done that in the past? And I think that you're always looking for ways to bring people in, but it was shrouded in mystery in terms of letting us know what was going on, but to watch it was very heartwarming, and I think we've all seen now some bits of both Jimmy and Bill being presented that great word and that honor, and it was fun to watch, and you're so happy for both. They don't know Jimmy as well as Bill. I've known Bill since he was assistant in Kansas City with Marty Schottenheimer, and Tony Dungy was actually on that staff too, so it was a loaded staff back in the early 90s in Kansas City. And I knew Bill and his first wife, who's since passed, but very special moment. And Bill is a wonderful guy. Just the way. And earlier this year, he was put into the Pittsburgh Steelers Ring of Honor, or Hall of Fame, or whatever they call it in Pittsburgh. And that's a big deal. So he's had a terrific football season for sure.
Talking with Kevin Harlan from CBS NFL on CBS and Westwood One on where we are now coming down the stretch of the final four teams. You have to be surprised by Tennessee or not of the four, or is this about what you expected as the season was rounding down?
Well, it seems like everyone's talking, Brad, about just the way that Tennessee has won, and then going back and said, well, of course, dummy, this is exactly the way it should be done. You run the ball and you play defense, right? I mean, like, we've heard that since you and I were little guys and first reading about football and playing touch football in the backyard. I mean, that's what it's always been. It's running the ball and managing a game, and that's how Green Bay won with Bart Starr. That's how Terry Bradshaw won in Pittsburgh, and really the passing game is taking on, it's the flashy part of it, but it's not really the guts. And I know that there's a kind of a suppression of the importance of running backs and running games and everything else, but listen, Green Bay wouldn't be where they are if they didn't have a running back that was over 1,000 yards, and Seattle wouldn't have been where they were without Chris Carson running for 1,200 yards, and the three-headed monster that's in San Francisco. I mean, just go on and on. I mean, all these teams have got some kind of viable running game that makes a difference. And really the only one of the three that remains that probably doesn't is Kansas City. Now, they've had a mishmash of running backs, and they've had to go deep into the recesses of the Rolodex to call guys off the street and sign them because of injury and just ineffective play. They've just not really had anybody that's been a prominent running back, but they've got a quarterback who's very unique and some three elite stars that can catch the ball. So they're kind of a little bit in a different category. But the other teams have all been heavily reliant, especially Tennessee. And remember, Tennessee was 2-4,
right?
And they made the change at quarterback. They benched their Heisman Trophy winner and a high draft pick in Marcus Mariota, and they brought in Ryan Tannehill, who they traded for in the offseason. I get all that. But he was there really to kind of back up Mariota, and that was kind of the thought. There was no promise that he could try for the starting role. And then when Mariota wasn't really moving things, and Vrabel made the move, and Tannehill took over, and voila, I mean, here we are. They're in the championship game of the AFC, and they've done it with defense. They haven't put a lot on the quarterback's shoulders, and they've got a stud running back who's kind of once-in-a-generation guy with that size. So you've got to run it. There's got to be a component of that. It's got to complement the passing game. And if you don't have a running game, by God, you better have special people at other positions. Few teams can have that many special people, but all teams can somehow generate a running game, and that's what Tennessee has done all the way to these shocking wins over the last couple weeks. It's amazing to see where they are, but the win over Baltimore was just stunning to me. I'm just shocked that they are where they are, but here we see them, and it's going to be fun to watch them in the championship game at Arrowhead.
Which game are you doing, Kevin, this weekend?
I've got the Kansas City-Tennessee game. They gave me a chance last night to pick, and I grew up in Green Bay, but I broadcast the Chiefs for 9 years, and our family is still back in Kansas City, and the Chiefs have a chance to go back, Brad, to the Super Bowl for the first time in 50 years, and so I chose that. I don't know if there's a great difference between the games, but I think that Tennessee is a pretty hot story, and Mahomes now is kind of being anointed the next great quarterback. Both games have got great appeal. But we chose Kansas City really almost basically because my family's from there, and it'll be kind of fun to see if they would make it for the first time in 50 years back to the big game.
That's awesome. We'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time as always. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. Great to be on with you. Take care.
There's Kevin Harlan from Westwood One and the NFL on CBS. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. So last week I'm sitting with a parent, and this parent says, you know, my son is being recruited by NAU. He's also being recruited by a Pac-12 school or two. And he said, what do you think? And I said, well, if we go through measurables and everything, this makes sense. You know, you could go to the Pac-12. And then this parent said, yeah, but NAU has the major that he's interested in, and I don't want my son to force his way into a major. And it was like, wow, I'm talking to a normal parent. This is so cool. And so I figured, you know, we need to do a little bit more on information of recruiting around NAU. And I've seen Aaron Flugrad out on the trail former Sun Devil NAU offensive coordinator, now quarterback coach, doing both at Northern Arizona University. He joins us via Skype. He's at a coaches convention in Nashville, Tennessee. It is great to see you first and foremost. And I just want to start with, what is your pitch to an Arizona in-state high school kid to look at NAU? What are the measurables? What's the pitch?
Well, thanks for having me on, Brad. Really appreciate it. And main thing that we tell people from the state of Arizona is we're going to recruit this state better than anyone in the country. And we're going to build a national championship team with kids from the state of Arizona. And that's something that's really special and bigger than yourself. Come up the hill to Flagstaff and come and win a national championship in Division I football and do it with kids from this valley. So we're really fired up to do that. And I know on that first signing day, we've already signed quite a few guys from the valley and looking to add some more going forward here in February.
When you hear a story like the one I had in the intro of a kid who has some Pac-12 interest, but right. NAU is standing over on the side and they actually have the major that fits the kid, how do you take the conversation? I guess when you're with the parents and the parents are like, wow, we got Pac-12 and then we have NAU. I'm not saying that derogatorily. I'm just saying they look at it one way. How do you work through that, Aaron?
Right. I think a lot of it comes back to opportunity and what are you trying to accomplish? And you can't get good unless you get on the field. And at our level, we have 63 scholarships. At a bigger level, Pac-12 level, they have 85. So we've been able to develop a guy like Emmanuel Butler, who played tight end in high school. A guy and who's now with the New Orleans Saints, a guy like Elijah Marks from Desert Edge High School, who was a basketball player and got an opportunity with the Kansas City Chiefs. So we take pride in being the number one growth and development school in the country. And that's in all aspects of life. And we're going to do that with Arizona kids. So as far as overall experience, a lot of times it's going to be more about the opportunities that you're going to receive at a place like NAU. Opposed to any school that you're looking at.
When you sit down with a kid for the first time, how do you identify that kid? When you sit in your recruiting chair and say, I'm interested in this kid, what are you looking for from in-state players and their parents?
Right. I think a lot of it comes back to the position that we're recruiting. But as far as off the field intangibles, we're looking for character first, a guy who's a great person. A guy who's a competitor, you know, so we like multiple sport athletes or a guy who's doing stuff year-round and competing. And then the last thing we look for is he a craftsman? Is he a guy who's really going to take the time to, put into his craft and really loves the game of football? And so those three characteristics are what we're really looking for. And then obviously there's a lot of opportunity at a school like NAU to get academic money. And for us to throw money on top of that football-wise. So those are all the things we look for. And then you just got to meet the qualifications we look for by being able to see your film positionally.
Do you want a kid that only is a football player?
We'd prefer a guy who plays multiple sports. And, again, that guy who wants to compete year-round. But then there's also guys who just play football that we'd love to have at NAU as well. So typically we look for more of a well-rounded guy, and that's usually the guy that we get at NAU where he hasn't reached his potential yet and his best football is ahead of him. And so those are typically the guys we get who are multiple sport guys.
Talking with Aaron Flugrad, NAU offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, about the ins and outs of recruiting. What are red flags to you?
Right. I think, for us is obviously you look at a transcript and a guy has missed a ton of classes and hasn't been there, a bunch of tardies. If he can't show up when mom and dad are around, it's going to be hard for him to show up when they're not around. And then, you know, in the day and age of the transfers and people leaving high schools, you know, we really like to evaluate that because we want a guy who's has the grit, the passion, perseverance, and who's going to be at NAU for the long haul, because throughout a college career, there's going to be ups and downs. and got to be able to deal with those and grow from those going forward.
So a kid that transfers, is that a red flag from high school to high school to high school and sometimes even for high school?
Yeah.
Because it means I don't want to compete, or I don't see my way of getting on the field. I don't want to compete. I'll just go somewhere where I don't have to compete. Is that a red flag?
Right, and I think it's a case-by-case and individual basis where you really got to look into the situation because, you know, if they're not going to play and there is an opportunity somewhere else, sometimes it is best for them to go. But a guy who has multiple transfers, you know, the first thing that is going to happen at a place like NAU or anywhere in the country, if it's going tough for them, is they're going to leave. And we want guys who we're able to pour into for 4 or 5 years. So we really evaluate the grit and the toughness and the mental toughness to be able to overcome that. And that's also something we really look for. You know, what does this kid have to overcome in his life to get to where he is now?
Social media, walk me through what that looks like as you guys put that lens on a kid. What are you looking at?
Right. Obviously, unfortunately, some kids eliminate themselves because of what they post on social media. And so I don't think that ever tells the whole story, but definitely gives a snapshot as to what the kid's into and what his habits are on a daily basis.
What about the parent that's never done this before and they are approached by pay me X and I'll get your kid noticed versus go online, find the Aaron Flugrad, the recruiting coordinator or the coach, drop them an email, put together a huddle tape. How are you about paying people to do all those services versus doing it yourself?
Right. I think those services are extremely beneficial at the lower levels, Division II and Division III. For Division I football, a lot of it comes back to the high school coach. And we have great relationships with the high school coaches within the state of Arizona. And so when we go out to a high school, those are guys that we trust, and we trust them being able to put their stamp on a kid opposed to a guy who, you know, got paid money, you know, by the family to try and get a kid recruited. So we really look at the evaluation from the high school coach, go to high school counselors, teachers there, other coaches, and really want somebody that's working with the kid on a daily basis to be able to put their stamp on his character and work ethic.
Do you analyze the parents? Meaning, yeah, the player does this, but the parents are nuts and crazy or they're fine. Do you analyze the parents in the recruiting process?
Yeah, that goes into a little bit, but typically it more just comes back to the kid, you know, because you don't want to penalize a kid if he has bad parents or think a kid's a great kid just because he has great parents. So usually it comes back to the kids. But unfortunately, that does happen, you know, probably about once per recruiting class where a kid, you know, just disqualifies himself just because of how difficult his parents are and how they're acting.
Tell me about Chris Ball and when you're out recruiting on the trail for NAU. How's that work?
It's phenomenal. You know, and Chris Ball, it was great last year. You know, I think he was the only head coach out there at all those showcases and really hitting the state hard. And I know a lot of people saw him, but just a tribute to him and what he wants to accomplish in state and how we're going to build a championship football team. So he's extremely aggressive in recruiting. We're going to build this thing inside out, and couldn't ask for a better guy to work for, where really things line up to be like-minded and changing kids' lives and impacting them on and off the football field.
Good stuff. I could go through this all day with you, but I'll let you go back to the coaching convention there in Nashville. Appreciate it. Thanks.